This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han. And coming up on The Breakfast Grill, we have a company that's been making headlines. Dago Ride is a motorcycle taxi service that's been making waves in the ride-sharing sector. So we're going to get Nabil Faisal Bamadaj, the CEO of Dago Ride, to discuss why he has said he vows to carry on despite a recent failure in the application for an operating license.
Yeah, and this will be interesting because Dago Ride has been on a collision course, no pun intended, with the government.
Ooh,
that was a bit dark. Yeah. Anyways, one of the key concerns that the government has was the element of safety, right? And then besides that, I would also, want to consider the liability aspects of it. I mean, it's all fine and dandy, you know, if, like, say, one customer wants to use this service, Dago Ride, and perhaps forego the liability. But then, let's say, you know, it does become a tragic accident.
Right.
Then what? Then who foots the bill?
I don't understand why. I mean, the government's made great strides in legalizing Grab and Uber last year, it was a very popular decision. And I know of two-wheeled ride service, ride-sharing services in other markets. Indonesia, Gojek is huge. I know Vietnam and Myanmar as well, that this is a huge market that caters to a wide sector of the society. So why not in Malaysia? I'm sure it will be a popular service, but I'm struggling to understand the regulation around it.
At the same time, when you consider other modes of transportation that are regulated, that doesn't mean that they are immune. Look at those express bus crashes.
Right,
you know,
you're absolutely right.
Like taxis and whatnot. So yeah, it's a very, very tricky affair. And,
well, let's sit down with him, the CEO of Dago Ride, Nabil Faisal Bamadaj, to discuss a complete frank discussion on the future and the viability of this new ride sharing and courier service for Malaysians. Dago Ride will be on The Breakfast Grill in 15 minutes. But till then, we'll take you through the local business news of the day. As mentioned, 52% of Malaysians believe that the current overall system has failed them. It is unfair and offers little hope for the future. And according to a survey by Edelman, this is the Edelman Trust Barometer, only 12% believe that it's working. Why so skewed?
Now, also something to note, for the first time in this Edelman's index, Malaysia is now on the distrustful side.
This is the first time we've fallen onto other end. Okay.
At least according to this article here. And I think what's interesting is that this comes at a time when we are seeing this rising anti-establishment, sentiment that's all around. Also, we must notice that this is very subjective, though, because, how do you trust? I mean, how do you define trust? Who do you trust? There are just so many moving parts here. But I guess we can still latch onto that headline Malaysians
but
are generally distrustful.
Well, I have to say, though, Han, I mean, I think like you say, it's subjective, but I think it's important because, we often talk about the trust deficit on The Morning Run and, we talk about the trust deficit widening, and clearly now we're having some figures to back that up. So according to Edelman, who was quoted at the event, this survey came when, if you remember, the Sabah Watergate issue came about, where the MACC made several high-profile arrests regarding that. And I wonder whether, again, this is to do with the fact that, with MACC becoming more active, you're hearing more and more about cases of corruption and leakages within, say, big names. That's causing that perception. So it's a cycle.
Right,
you hear more about it, you think, okay, there's more and more widespread corruption.
Exactly. So, it can be a form of confirmation bias, right? Because, you see, I was right, I told you, you're corrupt one. Then you're seeing all these events unfold, right?
Siri would understand
for the local one, do you want me to do it in Chinese? So the Huawei's,
Huawei's yet to be to be developed.
And then this survey also covers not just government. It also covers businesses, the media, and also NGOs. But I guess, put it simply, let me ask you this, Melissa. I mean, would any society trust their government? I guess that word government has become so toxic, all around the world that there's just this distrust anyways. Then you see what's happening in Wall Street, and you associate that with businesses. That trust deficit, I think, just you know, is permeated across all sectors of society.
That's true. But I think, you know, it can be mitigated. And I think that just the level of it is something to be said. But what is also interesting is that this is a worldwide trend. So it's not just unique to us here in Malaysia. Apparently, across the world, I think the level of trust has fallen quite significantly. And, you know, again, I don't know whether that's because it's all contingent on the kind of siloed world that we live in. You know, we only listen to echo chambers. And again, the confirmation bias that you talk about.
But I think we have to, it is important and imperative that we point out, though, there is a note here that there was an improvement of 9 points to 43% in the level of trust among the informed public towards the government. So,
The informed, Edelman has, I think, a criteria of what they define as the informed. So, informed public, so you know, those with access to information on TV, online,
BFM listeners.
There you go. All right. Well, let's move on to Bank Negara losses in the 1990s.
Speaking about trust deficit,
there you go. The cabinet has agreed to set up a special task force to conduct a probe on the losses suffered by Bank Negara during the forex trading in the 1990s. Now, this was a mandate out of the Prime Minister's office. They're saying they're going to have various government agencies be part of this task force. But the idea, essentially, is to identify, I mean, what happened, if there was any cover-up, speaking of the trust deficit, to make sure that, in fact, the losses that were reported were, in fact, the actual losses incurred.
Yeah, again, this stems from the allegations made a few weeks ago from former assistant governor at Bank Negara, Dato' Abdul Murad Khalid. It was an exclusive in the NST talking about how the central bank lost about 10 billion US dollars, not ringgit, US dollars from the forex speculative activities back in the 90s. But, you know, again, I remember when we spoke about this, you know, when it first came out, and also then Bank Negara issued a statement. It was, in my opinion, it just seemed to gloss over the issue at hand. And I can just read it really quickly. It's only like two sentences. So, and I quote, this is Ben Ngara's statement, the recent media coverage on forex losses refers to events which happened almost 25 years ago. Since then, the bank has moved forward, stronger, more transparent, and accountable. Under the current challenging and uncertain global environment, it is important that we focus on ensuring our financial system and the economy remain resilient and stable.
Right.
That's it. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, what about addressing, or, you know, it'd be nice, you know, it would help reduce that trust deficit if the central bank came out and said, here's what we've done, here's what the issue was, you know, then we can move forward. But no, it's just, not forget, it's 25 years ago, let's move forward.
Right.
No.
Well, okay, so Koo Soo Chong earlier asked, as we were discussing the story, he asked, you know, what's the main point of this? Because it feels to him, he said, like a witch hunt. And I wonder whether, again, you know, again, I guess this is all playing into the trust deficit, whether this is coming at a really, you know, inopportune time, given that it's said to be an election year, or next year is going to be an election year. And following what we saw with the 1MDB issue, where that case was considered closed and, you know, no action taken.
Well, yeah, and that would be giving Bank Negara the benefit of the doubt, which, you know, there is a place in the argument for that. I totally get that. But at the same time, you know, what happens to accountability? If, you know, you're going to hold other GLCs and other corporate, just any entity in Malaysia to a particular standard, why shouldn't you hold Bank Negara to that same standard as well? And, you know, in my mind, it also begs the question then, as Bank Negara goes about, you know, handing out fines and other, takes other action on other entities for, you know, various, you know, misdoings that happened years ago, then what about, you know, the skeletons, the alleged, keyword there, the alleged skeletons in their own closet? You know, it'd be nice to see Bank Negara really step up and take ownership of this, I think.
Okay, well, there's going to be a special task force by the Prime Minister's office, so I guess we'll find out the findings of this task force. Well, let's move on in a related story to private talks in which Abu Dhabi State Fund International Petroleum Investment Company, or IPIC. IPIC is now seeking 6.5 billion ringgit from 1MDB. Apparently, the talks have reached a deadlock. So, if you remember, IPIC took their case to the London Court of International Arbitration last June. But, you know, since then, both both parties are trying to thresh out a private settlement. So far, nothing has materialized.
Yeah, so this is actually $6.5 billion, you know, massive year. So if you consider, you know, how much the ringgit has fallen against the dollar since this
since June last year.
You know, so it's in ringgit terms, it's probably gone up a substantial bit, right? So obviously, this is the according to sources, the latest development in what has been a long ongoing saga between 1MDB and IPIC. You know, the resolution of which is absolutely imperative as we try to restructure 1MDB and move on. You know, so again, goes back to this whole theme, you know, for what we've been talking about over the last 10 minutes, right? This trust deficit. And then when we're seeing, you know, these efforts from, you know, 1MDB or these controversial entities to move on, it's, I mean, just really, really hard. And, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing.
What would be the breaking point? Well, what would break this deadlock?
Exactly. But even then, at the same time, you know, even if they get this deal resolved, right? Like, let's say these arbitration talks do get resolved. Do you think that would win your trust back? You know, it's a big, I mean, it's a big if, though.
Yeah.
I would even speculate that no, I don't think there's anything that 1MDB, you know, can do to even really, you know, basically reduce that trust deficit, eh?
Oh, well, I think more information, more transparency will go a long way. But very quickly, Han, let's take a look at the expectations for Malaysia's fourth quarter GDP. So we're about to get the numbers today, right? That's due today, noon.
Yeah, that's right. So at 12 o'clock, you know, keep your eyes open. We've got the fourth quarter 2016 GDP figures. Also, obviously, for the full year. Now, according to the Bloomberg survey's median estimate, we are looking at about 4.2% GDP growth for the entire year. So they'll fall quite nicely in the 4% to 4.5% target that the government had for 2016. My apologies.
Mm-hmm.
But then boiling it down to the quarter itself, we've got a pretty wide range here, according to, again, the Bloomberg survey. Everything from 5%, that's from Barclays. They see 5% on-year GDP growth for the fourth quarter, down to about 3.9%. That's RBS. So a pretty wide range there. So again, we'll have to wait and see what the official data is at noon.
Noon, all right. So we'll have to wait, see how the Malaysian economy grew. We've got the Breakfast Grill coming up just after the 8 o'clock news. So stay here with us in the Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.